And there's some great verses here that we want to note and take note of, because Luke is at pains to point them out to us. He wants us to notice things along the way. This is a road that when we travel it, we have to notice things along the way on. So Luke chapter 19, verse 28 reads, "After Jesus had said this, he went on ahead, going up to Jerusalem. And as he approached Bethpage and Bethany at the hill called the Mount of Olives, he sent two of his disciples, saying to them, 'Go to the village ahead of you, and as you enter it, you'll find a colt tied there, which no one has ever ridden. Untie it and bring it here. If anyone asks you, why are you untying it? Say, the Lord needs it.' Those who were sent ahead went and found it just as he had told them. As they were untying the colt, its owners asked them, 'Why are you untying the colt?' 'The Lord needs it,' they replied. They brought it to Jesus, threw their cloaks on the colt, and put Jesus on it. As he went along, people spread their cloaks on the road. And when he came near the place where the road goes down the Mount of Olives, the whole crowd of disciples began joyfully to praise God in loud voices for the miracles they'd seen. 'Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest.' Some of the Pharisees in the crowd said to Jesus, 'Teacher, rebuke your disciples.' 'I tell you,' he replied, 'if they keep quiet, the stones will cry out.' As he approached Jerusalem and saw the city, he wept over it and said, 'If you, even you, had only known on this day what would bring you peace, but now it is hidden from your eyes. The days will come when upon you, when your enemies will build an embankment against you and encircle you and hem you in on every side. They will dash you to the ground, you and the children within your walls. They will not leave one stone on another because you did not recognize the time of God's coming to you.' And when Jesus entered the temple courts, he began to drive out those who were selling. 'It is written,' he said to them, 'My house will be a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of robbers.' Every day he was teaching in the temple, but the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and the leaders among the people were trying to kill him. Yet they could not find any way to do it because all the people hung on his words." When a new government comes or a new power is in charge, as we've been observing through our newspapers, television, online, whatever, whichever medium it is that you get your news through, my goodness, haven't we seen change is inevitable. When a new power is in charge, we're going to feel the impact, we're going to feel the stress of change, right? We've all had the ups and downs of the news in the past week. Initially, the changes that are brought about by that new administration, the new governance, might seem unconnected. They might seem a bit distant, but gradually they work their way into our everyday lives. It's inescapable. Power has that impact. It changes things. Now, Luke wants us, in a very different way, to show us that the reality of King Jesus' rule, he wants us to see that the reality is that as Jesus steps in, His rule and reign has an impact. It has a consequence. And those consequences will ultimately be felt by everyone. So each of the realities that Luke wants us to get to grips with in this account of Jesus entering Jerusalem as he is proclaimed king, prefigures an even bigger reality each one of us is going to experience and that we're going to have to embrace. And the issue is this, that as Jesus walks into Jerusalem, as he walks down that road and further in, the more he goes in, the deeper are the consequences. At first, it seems so peripheral. It doesn't seem to be connected. It seems tangential on people's lives. But as he walks in, so the impacts drive themselves home until every one of us, even us included, as listeners to this story, have to account for them. Things change when Jesus comes to town. And that's so true in our lives. So let's consider the actions and reactions caused by Jesus stepping into the city as he takes that road to Calvary. And let's see what the actions and reactions are as Jesus then steps into our lives too. The first one that I want to kind of, I've tried to make them all, you know, do that preacher thing that, you know, everything starts with the letter R in the hope that you might remember. I'm not quite sure it works, but it helps me in my head anyway. So the first one is a big word. I don't know all of you will be familiar with it, but it's the word requisition. Requisition. It just means that you take something. You don't have to own it. You can say, I need it. And because of the power that you have, because of the influence that you have, you can take it. The government of our nation can requisition things. They can take hold of stuff and use it for their ends. They can use it to defend us. They can use it to support us. They don't have to ask whether we agree or not with it. It's the action of a king to requisition something. Just to say, I need it, and somebody goes and finds it, is the action of a powerful person. Of the king. And Luke wants us to see Jesus as the coming king. And so he talks of Jesus here at the start of this story as Jesus comes into Jerusalem. He talks of Jesus issuing commands, orders. Go into the village. There you'll find. Take it, bring it, for I need it. Say that the Lord needs it. The king gets what he asks for. Go find a donkey. It's a strange thing, isn't it? To ask for. And it's a strange scene that we're setting up here. Because, you know, even in modern times, victorious generals, kings, rulers love the parade, right? And quite often, the parade is that you get the biggest horse, the most striking beast you can find. Very often it's a white, you know, charger, and it's beautifully done out, and the person who's won the victory sits on that beast and is led into the city or you know, rides that horse into the city. And victorious kings would stage these kind of victory parades. Trumpeters, attendants, you know, that sort of thing. And this is such a subverted version of that, that Jesus is involved in. It speaks of humility at every level. No white horse that's yay high. No, instead a little donkey that's never been ridden before. And he's just sitting over it. It speaks of humility, but it echoes a prophecy made hundreds and hundreds of years earlier by the prophet Zechariah, who said in Zechariah chapter 9, "Rejoice greatly, daughter Zion, shout, daughter Jerusalem, see, your king comes to you, righteous and victorious, lowly and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey." He's righteous. He's victorious. He is lowly. We don't often see those three words brought together, do we? In the rulers that you can think of as you look around the world today, think of, do you think of those terms coming together? Victorious, righteous, and lowly. It's not the measure of our leaders very often, is it? And in verse 16 of that same chapter of Zechariah chapter 9, the prophet goes on to say, the Lord their God, this is just six verses later, the Lord their God will save his people on that day. So the significance of the donkey coming into the city with someone riding on it is to be setting off alarm bells. Da, da, da. This is the day salvation comes. This is the day the sent one of God is coming. Requisition is the first point. Recognition is the next point. As Jesus comes, some people, they get the picture that Zechariah has painted. They see that donkey and they remember, they're people who've been reading their Bibles. They're people who know the stories from of old. And the multitude, Luke doesn't say that just generally the crowds. Luke says the multitude of disciples. The whole crowd of disciples began joyfully to praise God in loud voices. In homage, they took off their coats and put them on the road. I sometimes think we struggle with the palm branch thing, and they do take palm branches because we're told that in the other Gospels. But Luke in particular wants us to realize that the response of people to the king is to take off their clothes, take off their outer garments, and lay them on the road. I don't know about you, but I would think twice about putting my jacket in front of you to stand on. You know, oh, look, there's a bit of mud on the road there. Let me just take off my jacket a minute, put it there for you so that you don't get your feet dirty. But this crowd are just lost. This is the king that's worthy. It's not even him that's standing on it. It's the donkey that's walking on it. But they put their cloaks down and their clothes down on the road so that they can acknowledge who Jesus is. And they're repeating here the words of Psalm 118. So written long ago, a hymn, a psalm, a prayer of God's people. And it says in verse 26 and 27 there, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord with boughs in hand. Join in the festal procession. Maybe it's as people remember, this is like Psalm 118, that they start going and cutting down the palm branches. The king is recognized, but not everyone gets it. Some of the Pharisees, verse 39, in the crowd said to Jesus, teacher, rebuke your disciples. I wonder, do you recognize Jesus this Palm Sunday for who he is? Do you get it? Do you see who he is? As it says in Psalm 118, verse 15, he has done mighty things. Recognition. And then there's revelation. Look at verse 41, as Jesus responds to the rebuke of the Pharisees. He looks at the city that he's approaching. He's coming down from the Mount of Olives. This is the view that you get as you come down from the Mount of Olives and you see the city of Jerusalem up ahead. And Jesus begins to weep as he sees the city. It's a strange reaction, isn't it? He weeps. He starts crying. He's such a feeling person. I've got a lot to learn from Jesus in terms of the way he expresses himself. But as Jesus is in the middle of this victory parade, we expect him to be happy. We expect him to be rejoicing as the crowds are. But no, he's weeping. The crowds are crying out and are joyful and are shouting his name. And he just has tears running down his face. Why? Because he can see what will come to this place. He will see what will happen to these people. He is grieved in his heart. If only you had known, you did not recognize the day of God's coming. You didn't recognize him like that blind man beside the road. You didn't recognize him like that wicked man, that tax collector, Zacchaeus, that tiny man who had to climb a tree because he recognized who Jesus was. You didn't recognize him, says Jesus. You didn't recognize. Just like the disciples. When Jesus looks, he sees everything. He sees the consequences of the choices that we make. He sees what he came to put right. Revelation. And finally, restoration. Further into the city, he arrives. As he comes through the city, he goes up there to the Temple Mount. And as he goes up onto the Temple Mount, he enters the outer court of the temple, which was the space that was designed for the likes of you and I, Gentiles. We were allowed to go into the outer court. Only Jewish people were allowed to go into the temple, but the Gentiles, it was called the court of the Gentiles. You could go there. And yet the court of the Gentiles had been taken over by business, by marketplace, by trade, by things that were going on there. Isaiah chapter 56 and verse 7 had called this the house of prayer for the nations, for all nations. But Jesus now sees what Jeremiah prophesied in chapter 7. When Jeremiah said, "This house that bears my name has become a den of robbers to you. I have been watching, says the Lord Almighty." In righteous indignation, Jesus begins a process of cleansing, of restoration. Because this is not to be a marketplace. This is to be a house of prayer. And so the stuff that's getting in the way of that relationship with God, of that coming to God and being real with him, needs to be got rid of, needs to be sorted out. There's so much to put right. And it's uncomfortable. It's disturbing. This side of Jesus. We're a little bit shocked by it. But friends, as Jesus steps into our lives, we might hear him asking for things. You know, the Lord, when he stepped into the life of the Apostle Paul, he told Paul that he needed him. He said, "I need you. You've been chosen." And so Paul was taken. That requisition happened in his life. As Jesus enters into our lives, we have the opportunity to recognize who he is. Will we do that? As he comes to us, he reveals things to us that we couldn't know otherwise. And he begins his process of restoration, changing us, cleansing us. And that can be uncomfortable. It can be disturbing. There are things to be upset and undone in order to put right, in order for the intended purpose to actually take place. Don't you know, says 1 Corinthians 3 and verse 16, that you yourselves are God's temple and that God's Spirit lives in you? No wonder the Lord sometimes comes into our lives and shakes up a few things. We are to be the house of prayer. We are to be the place of meeting with God. I wonder how you respond this Palm Sunday. There's three ways, I think, that people do respond. I've got some pictures here that just signify those three different ways that people respond. Are you prepared to welcome the Lord? Whatever the consequences, Lord, you're welcome. Step in, step on, move onwards. Take more steps into my life. Take more steps into my world. Change and transform it. Or are we amongst those in the crowd that as he gets further, we realize this wasn't what we asked for. That's far enough. Stop where you are. That it's all very well acknowledging you, Lord, but I don't want you coming any further in. Maybe you're in that place. Hopefully you're not in the place where you say, no, you're not welcome. There's no entry for you here, Lord. I don't want you because I don't know you. These are three different responses that the people that day perhaps felt. There were those who welcomed the Lord. There were those who said, no, we're not accepting this. And there were those in the middle who, I guess, changed sides through that first Easter week because they must have maybe been amongst that crowd that was crying out for Jesus to be crucified by the end of the week. No, Lord, that's far enough. You're too It's too radical. It's changing too many things. Here is the road then to Calvary. And Jesus, the opportunity we have is, do we welcome Jesus or not? Do we welcome him or not? Because, friends, there is another R that I want to add as we come to this table of remembrance. There's another one I hadn't thought of, our remembrance, which is restoration. Because the King, as he comes, King Jesus, he not only wants to, he not only wants us to respond to him, to recognize who he is, to see the things he reveals to us, and to restore us, but he wants to refresh us. So as we welcome him, he welcomes us to his table. He welcomes us with elements of bread and wine. And he says to us, you're welcome to gather at my table. You're welcome to be here. And I love these words. Come to this table, not because you must, but because you may. Not because you are strong, but because you are weak. Come not because of any goodness of your own that gives you a right to come, but because you need mercy and help. Come because you love the Lord a little and you'd like to love him more. Come because he loves you and gave himself for you. Come and meet the risen Christ, for you are his body. So my friends, as we have this opportunity today, this Palm Sunday, to respond to God's goodness in our lives, let's just take this moment to recognize in these elements of bread and wine everything that God has done for us. Let's just take a moment to reflect in our hearts how we welcome the King. What's our response to him? What's our need? Is there something the Lord needs to order and change? Is there something the Lord needs to restore? Is there something that we need to recognize? What is the step that we need to take? Is there some revelation that we need to experience? As you come to the table today, we're going to pass the elements around. It's just easier to do it that way today. But as you have the opportunity to take bread and wine, and to remember, not just Palm Sunday, but what came at the end of that week, that Jesus gave himself, his body, his blood, for you and for me.